Join Helen on Inspired Radio, 10 to 12 p.m. Mondays, Yarra Valley FM 99.1. Hi everybody, Helen here, and this is Inspired Radio. Welcome to the show. Inspired Radio is all about change and about getting uncomfortable, because you have to if you want some change. Change starts with you. You can sit around your whole life waiting for life to get better, but no one else is going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself. So this show is about talking to people who are creating change, people who are comfortable with getting uncomfortable, because we're creating a new world now, folks, a brand new world, a better world. So let's start a good conversation here on Inspired Radio. And today we're going to meet someone who certainly knows all about change. We're going to talk to Dr. Ian Brighthope. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you very much, Helen, and hello, everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on with us today. As you said, we could have used the excuse you were just finishing some brain surgery, but technical issues were what was going on. All right.
Yes, exactly.
So let me just firstly tell people just a little bit about you. So you are a retired medical practitioner. You've got over 40 years of experience in natural and integrative medicine. You graduated from agricultural science in 1965 and completed your clinical studies at Monash University in Victoria, graduating with a Bachelor of Medicine, a Bachelor of Surgery in 1974. And then, Ian, you went on to become much, much more than that, didn't you?
Yes, I did, Helen. I wasn't very happy with the undergraduate medical course, apart from the basic sciences, which made a lot of sense. The clinical sciences didn't, apart from clinical work for trauma and that sort of thing. But when it came to medicine and healthcare, well, healthcare just didn't exist. It was basically drugs, diagnosis, pathology and hospitals. And so I decided, after a couple of frustrating years in normal, ordinary practice, I decided to set up the College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine, mm-hmm. With a couple of others, but I was the one who initiated the name of this postgraduate training for doctors in nutritional medicine and environmental medicine.
Right.
And that was that's now been going for 43, nearly 44 years.
So you've been essentially setting up a new paradigm.
We set up a new paradigm back in 1978. When I returned from overseas and decided that the ordinary medicine was not for me, and I'd learnt a lot more about nutrition when I did agricultural science.
Sure.
Than I did when I was in medicine. In 6 years of medicine, we had 4 hours of lectures on nutrition and no practical training at all.
Yeah.
And I was witnessing, and I asked my professors, why aren't we doing something about patients' nutrition? And they were not interested. They said, we're treating this cancer, which was a lady lying in a bed, we're treating this cancer with chemotherapy. And that was all there was to it. And the lady looked like she was a scarecrow. She needed nutrition.
Yeah.
And basically, they were giving her ice cream and jelly for dinner. And I thought, this is just...
they still do, Ian. They still do.
I don't know. I know. I mean, the worst thing for somebody with cancer is to give them sugar.
Yes. Yes.
But you're
telling me something that I found out when I did my chiropractic studies, is because they all came from veterinary sciences and things. And even during the last 5 or 6 years here in Australia, a lot of veterinary surgeons knew more about what was going on than a lot of doctors and hospital workers.
That's right. That's right. And I think our health system is not a health system. It's a medical and hospital system. It's designed for treating disease. And also, it's a very good business model for Big Pharma, the drug companies.
Well, you're now talking about the second question I was going to ask you about corporate, right, and that medicine has gone corporate, yeah?
Oh, yes. Medicine's gone corporate. Doctors are graduating, understanding that you fulfill protocols in front of patients' care. So... you've got any sort of disease, it's a protocol. Doesn't matter whether you're a GP or a specialist, it's a protocol, and the protocol is basically a series of drugs.
And the protocol's what I call boxes, right? You go and you see a doctor and they just try and figure out if you go in box A, B, C, D or E and treat you accordingly.
That's correct. And it's not good health, it's very expensive, and it's driving out, well, the reason we're in such a dire strait with regard to our finances and why the young people can't afford a home, and some people can't even afford a decent meal, is because the money has been wasted. And I'll give you a clearer example. There is nearly $1 trillion, that's $1,000 billion. Those figures are staggering.
Yes.
It was close to $1 trillion that we wasted on COVID. And it was a waste because COVID was only a mild flu-like illness for most people, nothing at all for the majority, and only those who have seriously ill or the aged were at risk. And so our stupid government, and I say stupid government because I can't think of any other better word.
I agree.
They ignored anything to do with making the population healthy with respect to their immune systems. And I pleaded with Greg Hunt, the health minister. I pleaded with Scott Morrison, the prime minister.
I heard you in one of your presentations. You said you wrote to everybody from the prime minister down.
Yes, I did, including the unions.
Yep.
I wrote to the AMA, I wrote to the RACGP, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. They essentially all ignored me.
So why do you think that was? Why do you think they were ignoring you?
Well, because of pressure from above. And the pressure from above is we only treat with vaccines and antivirals.
Yep.
We don't do anything with regard to prevention. Because if we did have something that was actually effective, and we know that we did have things that were effective, then the vaccine companies would not have the right to adopt the emergency use authorisation of their unapproved medications, that is, the vaccines.
Mm.
So the pressure came from the drug companies. So our puppets in Canberra, the leaders of this country, are basically kowtowing to the most powerful industry in the world, or one of the most powerful industries in the world. So that's the vaccine industry. They are organisations of business people who want to make money for their shareholders. And to do so, they've got to push product into the marketplace. And it's so easy when you can manufacture a product that can be faulty, that may not work, that can have serious adverse side effects, but you don't get sued if you have an inferior product or product that causes death.
I mean, they've set that up like by stealth, really, haven't they? It's like all of this came in the back door somehow and quietly and slowly set itself up.
That's right, Helen. I mean, it was Ronald Reagan who gave the drug companies the permission to manufacture vaccines and not be sued if they had a faulty product.
Yes.
And so instead of three or four vaccines back in 1986, when he allowed this to happen, we've now got umpteen numbers of vaccines, 17 to 20 different vaccines for children up until the age of 10 or 12, with so many injections and so many injections of antigens that are foreign. Basically, we're injecting children with toxic substances. And the worst thing we've ever done is inject children and pregnant women and the rest of the population with genetic substances known as messenger RNA, and that was the COVID vaccines.
So I want to just stop it right there, right, because we've just given people about 15 minutes of stuff that they really need to start absorbing. Ian, we were just talking about vaccines. Tell me your thoughts about vaccines.
Well, my thoughts about vaccines is that they have been treated as a sacred cow. Let me say that I don't believe there's been any vaccine, apart from possibly the smallpox vaccine, that's ever eliminated a disease. We have gone down the wrong track when it comes to vaccination. When we inject a foreign substance like a bacteria or virus, whether it be killed or partially killed, into the system, we actually produce antibodies to the bacteria and the virus, and that's called immunisation. But it doesn't necessarily mean you are immune to the disease. All it means is the injection of the foreign proteins, the foreign bacteria or virus, has caused your immune system to produce antibodies, that doesn't necessarily mean you're immune to the disease. Mm-hmm. It means that you may react differently to the disease when you are exposed to it. But let me say that I always thought that the polio vaccine was one that was effective and good, but it carries with it its side effects. And some of the polio vaccines in the early days actually caused polio and or some deaths. So the vaccines are foreign substances that are injected into your system combined with what we call an adjuvant. An adjuvant is something that will actually aggravate the immune system to produce more antibodies. It's combined also with things like aluminium and mercury for preservative purposes.
Mm.
So these are toxic heavy metals.
Mm.
And the first vaccine that a baby gets on day one is the hepatitis B vaccine, which contains aluminium. And aluminium is a neurotoxin. It causes poisoning to the nervous system. So that's the start of our poisoning of
yes.
our children.
And really, the immune system's kicking into gear because it's being attacked. It thinks it's being attacked. It has to do something about what's being introduced into the body.
Yes. And honestly, those who believe that infectious disease means the body is at war are parking up the wrong tree.
Mm.
They don't know what they're talking about. What we do is we live with bacteria and viruses and fungi and a whole range of other microorganisms all day long.
Yes.
And all night long. And our whole body is covered with bacteria. Our internal cavities, like the nose and the throat and the vagina and so forth, are full of bacteria and viruses. And we have them also in our gut. There are more bacteria and viruses and cells in our system than we have of our own cells and tissues.
Mm-hmm.
So we're living in harmony with microorganisms constantly. And so our immune system is balanced and managing all of these microorganisms so that they live in harmony with us. And in fact, the right ones in our gut help us to digest food, help to stimulate our immune system, help also to improve our mental health and mental well-being as well. So we should not be ever using antibiotics unless it's for a critical purpose and saving a life, because antibiotics mean we are killing the good bacteria, and that's part of our major problem.
And there's a misunderstanding, though, isn't there, Ian, that when something like additional prolific amounts of bacteria or whatever are being produced in the body, we've labelled that as disease or some condition instead of understanding that possibly the body is actually reacting and addressing something that we're not even aware is going on in our body.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, we can actually make our immune system, which consists of white blood cells, whole range of white blood cells called helper cells, suppressor cells, natural killer cells, lymphocytes, leukocytes. There's so many white blood cells that are there for our defense.
Yes.
And we make those white blood cells work better when we're well nourished. And one of the most important nourishments we can achieve is sunlight, because it stimulates us to produce a whole range of substances in the skin, in particular vitamin D. Vitamin D is made in the skin from cholesterol, and it goes to every cell in our body, every nucleus in our cell, and tells every cell in our body that the vitamin D is there and available to activate our immune systems and protect us against bacteria and viruses like COVID, for example, bacteria like meningitis, and also protect us against cancer. So
sure.
It was absolutely idiotic to cause us to lock down.
Yes.
And stay inside, away from the sunlight.
Yes. Yes.
The exact opposite. opposite to what they should have been doing.
Well, you think about it, Ian. You and I come from a generation, you know, when we were kids, so let's go back, you know, 50 years. If we got a cold or flu, for starters, my mum, if we had a cold and, you know, I tried to really stack it on as hard as I could to stay home, she wouldn't let us. It was like, get to school, right, and, you know, here's a hanky or, you know, take it with you. You know, we just had to work our way through it and either have some lemon honey drinks and, you know, get out and play and sweat a bit and things like that. We weren't scared of germs and viruses.
No, I mean, you're absolutely pricks on your chest and you got a gob full of cod liver oil,
yep,
which contains your vitamin A and your D,
right,
for your immune system,
right,
and you're over it. But
how did we get here? How did we get so terrified of...
Because we've been terrified. We've been made fearful.
Mm.
We've been made fearful and we're kept fearful by governments that want to control us.
Well, I just saw that last week. I mean, there was a couple of articles about the Mozzies are coming, you know. There's all this media hype about these Mozzies in China. And for the people that have actually started to question and challenge the narrative, I mean, there's other people like me, I just laughed. I thought, really, how can people believe this anymore?
Well, they believe it because for generations we've been fooled. We've been conned into thinking that modern medicine has the answers
to everything.
Everything. And in the good old days, the doctor was regarded as a god. Well, the doctors are no longer regarded as gods. In fact, they've lost their sacred position in the community as a result of their behaviour during COVID.
Yes.
You know, forcing people to be injected and forcing the doctors to force the people to be injected was something that happened in the Second World War,
mm-hmm,
when the Nazis took people into the concentration camps and forced them to take injections and drugs and chemicals to see what would happen. Well, there was no difference because our people in Australia and America and Europe or all around the world were forced to take injections, experimental injections. They were not proven to be safe and effective. In fact, RNA had been shown to be dangerous in the past. I cannot believe that we've been taken to the sacrificial altar and some of us have been actually made very, very ill with these injections.
Yes.
And others have suffered from such a degree of illness that they've passed away and died.
Mm.
Now, I do not trust the mRNA technology. And neither does RFK Jr. in the United States, to the point where he has instructed DARPA to stop funding 22 clinical trials on the use of this mRNA platform as an injectable agent to prevent disease. He's actually stopped 22 different studies being conducted by the government authorities, funded by the government in the US,
mm-hmm,
because of its dangerous nature. And that's $500 million, $500 million worth of research that he's cancelled. And I take my hat off to him because he has the courage to do that and stand up against these behemoths of companies that believe that they are more powerful than the leaders of our profession and the leaders of our country even.
You know, we still live in a world that is, you know, power and money are still so dominant, aren't they?
Yes, Alan, they are, unfortunately. And these organisations, they work with government departments to keep people fearful of nearly everything.
Because it's good for business.
It's good for business. I mean, to keep people fearful of war means it's good for business. So we make more jets, we make more bombs, we make more ammunition and tanks and so on. And it's just a vicious cycle because we spend so much on fear-mongering, we spend so much on propagandizing, and that is brainwashing the population. And we do it through the television, we do it through radio, we do it through the media.
Yeah.
I mean, the mainstream media, as you know, has been captured by Big Pharma.
Yes.
And big money. I mean, as we call it, the military-industrial pharma complex now,
mm-hmm,
and others also adding the complexes of conflict and censorship.
Yep.
So, I mean...
And look, now you touched on war there too. We are at war, even here in Australia, aren't we? There's a silent war going on, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. There's a war. I mean, if you want to divide people up, it's been very, very effective. The government has been very effective. And it's been conducted by the government, but the government is not the owner of it.
Yes.
The controllers are far above. I mean, the controllers are those in industry, in big industry, big oil, big gas, et cetera, et cetera, and big pharma.
There's a bigger agenda, a much bigger agenda.
There's a much bigger agenda, absolutely.
Yes.
And, you know, we have to say no to demands by government when we believe that the government is not working in the best of our interests.
And that's really difficult for people, Ian, when they start to see, you know, like just people getting out there to protest and to say no, you know, then we've got a police force that is, you know, kind of overstepping the mark themselves. And what was being put through the media makes people really terrified about, you know, saying no to their doctor and no to their government.
But, I mean, the thing is, we're being propagandised to the point where we're actually fearful. We're being made fearful of new infections, and monkeypox was the next one after COVID. I mean, I've gone through epidemic after epidemic after epidemic.
Yeah, well, you started with the AIDS. AIDS and stuff, didn't you?
And, you know, see, the whole thing about the immune system is if we nourish it with sunlight, with vitamin D, with vitamin C and zinc and good food, stay away from, you know, seed oils and sugars and junk food, we can fight off nearly everything, including cancer. So I think we do need to start having faith in ourselves and our ability to stay healthy, keep healthy.
Yes.
There will always be a section of the population who don't have a clue or who don't care, but we should not be dragged down by those who don't know, don't understand and don't care.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Ian, we're just going to take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about how people can do that, yeah?
Sure, sure.
Thanks, Ian. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Helen here, Inspired Radio. We're here with Dr. Ian Brighthope until 11 o'clock today. So, Ian, let's just talk to the listeners about what they can do themselves about this government overreach and this medical establishment and what they're trying to do. How can people get their power back?
This is going to take, I think this is generational, Helen. I don't think it can happen overnight because we have politicians who don't understand what really is happening in the world. And basically, our current national government has signed up to the World Health Organization's international health regulations, which means when they come into force, we will have lost our national sovereignty with regard to healthcare. So if the WHO, the World Health Organization, decides that there's a nasty virus going around, they can instruct our government that the best thing that they can do would be to lock down, that to mask again and to put up social distancing demands, and also force us to take a medication or a vaccine that they have predetermined is in the best interests of the population. The complete opposite to what we talk about when we talk about good health.
Mm.
So there are only a handful of politicians in Canberra, Helen, who we can talk to and we have spoken to and we have listened, who are awake to what is really going on in the world. I mean, the international health regulations can be applied to the climate as well. So they can say, okay, you're not going to be able to travel so much, or if you use your car to go more than 15 minutes out of the centre of your city, you'll pay a huge fee for it because of the carbon tax and the issues around carbon.
And Ian, these things, this is where people get, you know, people who haven't done any investigation or research see that this is all conspiracy theorist stuff, you know. Unless you've done some research, it all sounds really wacky.
I know, but, you know, people are realising, a lot of people still haven't realised that a lot of their relatives and friends have either been made very ill from the vaccines or died from the vaccines.
Mm.
They can't connect the dots. But it's well established now that these vaccines were very deadly, and they're also causing a lot of very bizarre conditions, including what we now call turbo cancers, which are cancers that arise very suddenly at stage four, which is terminal, and grow very quickly and people die.
Mm.
We also, I mean, we knew that one of the vaccines, the early one from AstraZeneca, that was called clot shots. You know, it was causing clotting, which causing heart attacks and big clots going into the heart and lungs and killing people and strokes. It had to be taken off the market. Well, you know, we know that the other vaccines were just as dangerous.
In fact, yes.
Probably more dangerous. But we kept on injecting. And we've got a population of people who've been made very sick and weak as a result. And the mainstream media is not allowed to talk about the adverse effects and the deaths from the vaccines. They are just not allowed. They are prevented to.
They're gagged
because they are dependent on the government for advertising. You know, the government money advertising the pandemic and the announcements made during the pandemic. So and the ABC is no different. They are banned from speaking about the adverse effects of the vaccines.
Well, that's what you said earlier with the health system controlling the media and what is being said.
Yeah, it basically every government in the world sends representatives to the World Health Organization, and within the World Health Organization there are various committees, Gavi, CEPI and so forth. These committees sit around talking about how we can make the population take vaccines when they don't want to. And they know how to do it. They manipulate it using psychology and psychologists who know how to deal with the masses, with groups.
Absolutely.
And how to put the fear of God into people.
And that's why they brought in the masks and the social distancing and things like that.
Yes.
Because
yes.
That was all psychology, and that was all. If you want to find out how much of your population is compliant, well, the best way to do is to see how many have put masks on and how many are doing as they're told and being obedient.
Well, we knew right from the beginning, Helen, that masks don't stop viral spread. They were useless, and the study showed that COVID was not prevented using masks at all.
Mm.
But that just basically says, okay, these social distancing, and people still social distance automatically.
Yes, there's people still wearing masks.
Yeah, and the wearing of masks is just a reinforcement that there's a very, very, very dangerous virus around, which is bizarre when you see people driving around lone drivers with a mask on.
Yes.
I find that absolutely ludicrous. But the most ridiculous thing they did was lock us all down. Because in the early, we've known that lockdowns don't work. They don't work with infectious disease. They never have. There's no scientific evidence for it at all. And 30,000 doctors and scientists signed a declaration at the beginning of COVID stating that lockdowns should not occur. The effects of the lockdowns will be devastating, especially to children who miss out on so much schooling, and it has. I mean, it was with a great Barrington declaration where 30,000 of us signed a declaration asking the governments of the world not to lock us down, to stop the lockdowns. The best way to manage an infectious disease is quarantine, of course.
And what that all did was it caused huge mental trauma. That people are, you know, you may as well say that the majority of the population is still suffering from some sort of PTSD.
Absolutely, and there are alcoholics now who would never have been alcoholics and drug addicts because, you know, they just couldn't cope with the anxiety.
And that's the silent war that I talked to. I said
it's the silent war.
Yes.
There's still a silent war going on. My medical profession, I'm ashamed of it because of its leadership.
Gosh.
I love the doctors. I love my friends in medicine. But many of them are still blind, willfully blind to what's going on. They are they're suffering from a form of mass formation where they are basically brainwashed, hypnotized to some extent by the propaganda.
Mm.
And it's very difficult once you've got a narrow focus and you've got blinkers on to look anywhere, because as soon as you look outside that, you'll be, if you're a doctor or a nurse who've been injecting and know that the injections have caused problems, you'll feel so bad, so guilty. You won't be able to cope with it.
Yeah.
And we do have to forgive these people who blindly went along with it.
Well, we do, because, I mean, I vaccinated my kids when they were young and stuff, and I was proud of what I was doing, and I you know, never saw outside of, you know, the little kind of limited bubble that I lived in. It took a lot of years to, you know, to change the opinion. So I absolutely understand where some people are at, and we do give them a lot of love and respect and hope that they listen to a conversation like we're having today and just open their mind a little and do a bit of their own research as well, because you're talking from experience, right? You've got such a clarity and such a certainty about you, which comes from experience. You know, I just want everyone out there to know that you're not making this up, right?
I was in Asia when SARS-CoV-1 hit, and I saw the panic there. It was a severe virus, and it burned itself out very, very quickly. Mm. I mean, the same thing would have happened with SARS-CoV-2 with COVID. We would have been out of the epidemic. It wasn't a pandemic. We would have been out of the epidemic within 6 to 8 weeks if we'd let it rip.
Yep.
And we'd made sure that everybody just went and had a blood test to make sure that their vitamin D level was above 125 nanomoles per litre. And we would have had the majority of the population catch the virus. They would have been asymptomatic. They would not have had any symptoms whatsoever, apart from perhaps a runny nose. And the same thing for the elderly. And I argued very strongly with the elderly.
Oh, yes, it's shocking what they did. It's absolutely shocking what they did.
Well, basically, they killed them. They killed a lot of people.
Yes. Yes, without a doubt.
I don't mind saying that because we can back it with evidence.
Yes.
We can back it with evidence. And the evidence now is coming out of the United States with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Now, just 1 second, Helen. I've got a call coming in.
Oh.
I've just put him off. In fact, it was Barry Green from the radio station in Western Australia.
Oh, I've heard of Barry. Yes, yeah. Oh, there you go.
Barry was here last week. We had a long chat about regional radio stations and how important they are.
So, okay.
There you go.
And along comes me as well. There you go.
Along comes Helen.
So tell me, or let's tell the listeners, what's the agenda? What's the big game at play here?
Well, the big game at play is to make sure that we're all controlled and that we'll be living in 15-minute cities. And I mean, the United Nations has nominated many of our councils and cities as 15-minute cities, and which means you're limited to 15 minutes of travel from your city. And if you want
to... Well, I mean, just sorry to butt in. Well, I've done that a bit, I think. Nova Scotia. They've just announced that there is a ban on anybody going into the forests, into the woods. And they're saying it's being done because of fire danger, and we want to keep everybody safe, which is the narrative that goes out there. And there's a ban that no one's allowed to go have a picnic, a walk, take, you know, their tent or whatever. No one is allowed in the woods. The fine is $25,000 minimum.
Yes. Well, I mean, we have to be aware of that here.
Yes.
They're doing the same thing.
It'll be coming here next summer.
Yeah. We need to realise that you can either have freedom or security. And they will promise you the security, but you will sacrifice your freedoms. And we've had wars over freedom in the past. And if we don't fight for our freedoms, if we don't fight hard for our freedoms, then we will lose, and we have lost the respect of future generations because we are the generation that allowed our freedoms to be dissolved away for security.
Mm.
And honest security, the government office, you know how much security the government offers when you want to be cared for by the government. The government doesn't give a hoot about you at all. And the politicians may say we do care, and they may care, but the government is not run by the politicians. The government is run by the bureaucrats.
Behind the scenes, yes.
Behind the scenes, we've got the bureaucrats who are there to establish their own, what do we call it, their own kingdoms, if you like.
Mm.
Not so much kingdoms, but I'm looking for the right word. You know, when you get to 79, you really struggle for words.
You haven't been struggling for words at all, Ian. But there is an agenda, right? And our government has been ramping up over at least the last 20 years, and especially the last six, taxes, more fines, more regulations, over and over again. That's all they seem to be doing. Because for everybody out there, you've got to realise that you're getting herded into a pen and the door's going to close. It's going to close because they want you poor. They want you stripped of everything that you've got so that you are reliant on government.
Well, exactly. I mean, Helen, why did we spend nearly, $800 billion, not just billions, $1,000 billion, you know, nearly $1 trillion was wasted on COVID. They knew what they were doing.
Mm.
They knew that it would slow down the economy. They knew it would damage the economy. Mm. And what's happened? Well, young people can't afford to buy a home in a country like Australia.
Yes.
I mean, we've got so much land, so many resources. Where is the money going?
Well, we haven't got the resources anymore, Ian, have we? They sold that off.
Well, they have. But, I mean, when you look at the resources, we do have them, but they have sold them off, and we need to take them back.
Mm.
I think... we need to take them back, and we need to have a different system of selecting politicians, because Liberals not much better than Labor, and the Greens are basically communists.
Well, they're two sides of the one coin, aren't they?
We
just get given an illusion that we're choosing a side. But the bottom line is, I mean, I've seen that they're not in power or government. They're not, Liberals aren't in, or Labor's not in for long enough to make any significant changes. 4 years is a really cool time because they promise all sorts of things, mess around for a while, and then, oops, 4 years is up. We better, you know, get back and be re-voted in or out or whatever. And that stops them truly making significant change.
That's right. They've let our defences down, and the government is there to manage our defences.
Mm-hmm.
And we have foreign countries firing live ammunition off our shores with the government not even knowing they were there. I mean,
wow,
is a disgrace.
Yes.
You know, they are there for our security and the protection. The same with the state government and the state police. But during COVID, no, that the communist government in Victoria, the communist who's running Victoria, the dictator, sent out the men in black uniforms with masks on their faces, and repeating rifles that fired rubber bullets into a peaceful crowd.
Yep.
Now, that is creating fear amongst anybody who's wanting to demonstrate for freedom, and that's what they were doing.
And that was done deliberately too, because to get our own police force, our own men and women, to do that to us would have been a little bit more difficult. But you bring in people that are from outside of us, they'll do whatever it takes, because there's no personal involvement, there's no personal connection, is there?
That's right. No, there's none whatsoever. So we do need a different breed of politician. We need to educate the young. The young need to understand that they can have more than what they've got. They can have a better life. They don't need to live with this negativity about climate change, because the climate has always changed.
It always has, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's another lie.
It's another huge agenda, a huge agenda.
The whole of COVID was a confabulated lie, and it was very well done by Big Pharma. We know that now. And those who don't know about it, they can sign up to my Substack and learn a little bit more, because I put the important issues up on my Substack. But the other big lie is that we've got a wonderful healthcare system. It's rubbish. We have a very, very good disease care system. If you've got trauma, if you're in a car accident, etc., we're the best in the world at patching people up.
Sure.
But when it comes to our overall health, the industry has decided that we're going to make people sick, and we'll give them drugs to make them
better.
we'll fix up the side effects of one drug, but the second drug will produce its own side effects. So that will beg the question, do we need another drug? And so, you know, you see elderly people on 10 to 20 different medications. don't need. All they need is some decent food and maybe some vitamins and some minerals and some exercise and some sunlight.
Sunlight, yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
The old Queen Victoria Hospital, they had verandas facing doors.
I know, I've seen photos, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The patients were wheeled out in the sunshine.
Yes.
And those with tuberculosis, their tuberculosis would clear up, and those who weren't wheeled out, they remained ill. So, you know, what more do you need? I mean, we know it produces vitamin D, but produces all of these other things as well, including melatonin, which that stimulates your mitochondria, the energy packages in your cells. So many other things that happen when you put somebody out in the sunlight.
Yes.
And I mean, we're made fearful of sunlight because it's so-called causes skin cancer. It doesn't cause skin cancer.
No, it doesn't. I'm glad you brought that up. That is such a lie, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it causes skin damage if you're out there too much.
Too often as well.
Mm-hmm. Can become pre-malignant and malignancy can get worse. But it happens also if you're ingesting a lot of sugar and alcohol.
I was just going to say that. It depends on how toxic your own body is as to how you feed in the sun.
Yeah, and there's studies to show that vitamins A, C and E actually protect you against skin damage, and if you have got skin damage, can protect you against the skin damage becoming precancerous and then cancerous.
Wow.
The science is there, but you know, you don't hear about the science because the mainstream media doesn't want you to hear about it. The ABC doesn't have. I mean, they might have a health spokesperson, but it's mostly about drugs and disease.
Well, which is why I've got this show, Ian, and which is why I've got you on here, and I'm going to get many more as well to start getting the message out there live to everybody because mainstream is just blocking it and that has to stop. And having said that, we're just hitting the hour now, Ian. Oh, my gosh, our time is up and I've got so much more to ask you and so many more things to listen to. I'll have to have you back on. Is that okay?
Oh, that's okay, Helen.
Good. That. Well, I want to thank you so much. It's been an absolute honour having you on and listening to you. As I said, you just ooze, like, you know, clarity and experience, which is just wonderful. So thank you so much, Ian. Until next time, okay?
Take care.
All right. Thank you.